Thanks for listening to the Best of Outkick the Coverage podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday morning from 6 to 9 a.m. Eastern, 3 to 6 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio. Find your local station for Outkick the Coverage at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every morning on the iHeartRadio app by searching FSR.
This is the Best of Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis on Fox Sports Radio.
Hopefully you recovered from what was a good Memorial Day for you. We can't complain here in the Geico Outkick Studios, where we come to you live with the Tuesday edition of the Outkick the Coverage radio program. Jason Martin, Jeff Schwartz in for Clay Travis for one more day. Your fearless leader is back tomorrow. Although we're apart these days, we are sharing more. Geico sharing more, too, with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for both current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. The crew is out in L.A. W.R. Bros. With me here in Nashville, Tennessee. You can find Jeff on Twitter at Jeff Schwartz. You can find me at JMart Radio. If you want to join the program, the phone lines, that can be had too at 877-99 on Fox. That's 996-6369. Jeff, what's up? How was Memorial Day outside of a lot of recording and a lot of work?
It was good. Yeah, I texted you an article last night to
hilarious
about today, and you said, "Yeah, I sent you that yesterday." I did two more podcasts. I had the kids around, obviously. It was good, man. We're getting a little heat now. It feels more like summer. I didn't do very much. You know, it's weird to not have kind of live sports on. I haven't missed it too much, even though I will say this weekend was the first time where I think I have. I told my wife this yesterday. Like, I've enjoyed the family time. I normally work from 6 to 9 Eastern doing radio, and that's now been whittled down to a 1-hour podcast every day. We do that in the middle of the day, and so I like having the family time at night now. But I also do miss, you know, coming down from work and having sports on. This is the first weekend I've missed it. I haven't really truly missed it yet, but I feel like if we don't have football and we don't have NBA and baseball come July, when I think in my head we're going to get these sports back and going again, that's going to be a big blow for me, I think. Jason, I think we're heading in the right direction with this.
Well, we have to be. Eventually, things are going to get back to normal. I think the NBA is where we can start, but I think we'll bridge pretty quickly into football, as we told you we were going to do yesterday, looking at reopening, looking at how this might look logistically, and even some conflicting information from inside the same conference with what we've seen from Michigan and Iowa, just as one example. But I saw yesterday, we talked some about the NBA yesterday, Jeff, but then I saw Brian Windhorst last night on ESPN talking about basically plans do not include 30 teams coming back at the end of July, which means, are we going to get just a 16-team playoff, or are we going to get a 16-team playoff plus, is how it's been described, which would be maybe a play-in tournament for a couple of added seeds. Yesterday, I ran through the idea, and same thing I said on Fox Sports Radio on Sunday on the Jason Martin Show, that I would expand it out just a little bit and just turn this thing into a tournament. But even if you don't and you just go with 16 teams, okay, I guess that's all right. But if you look at the playoff races by conference right now, in the East, Magic, Wizards, Hornets, Bulls occupy the 8th through the 11th slots currently. And the West is the Grizz, the Trailblazers, the Pelicans, yeah, and the Kings. And you look at Grizzlies and Pelicans, and you see two teams that I think the NBA, if they could, would still like to have Zion Williamson and Ja Morant around, just to get them a little bit more exposure, especially right at a time where we're all going to be watching. You said this weekend was one of the first times where you really miss sports, and I can agree, because right now we should be in the middle of the NBA playoffs. We right should be watching basketball that counts, and a lot more people talking about it on a regular basis. Twitter should be lit up with people talking about these early round series and preparing to see, you know, who's going to be playing in the conference finals and things like that. It looks like, and this makes sense. I mean, this is the same thing as the NHL is thinking. They're going to knock off the bottom teams and do this 24-team deal. That's what was talked about all weekend long. It makes sense for the NBA. There's no reason to bring 30 teams back. There are logistical concerns if you think about the virus as it relates to people coming from overseas. We've had various travel bans. It's been expanded to Brazil. That story hit over the last 24 hours or so as Brazil's become kind of a hot spot. But there are concerns, but that's one of the reasons why it was crazy to me that the NHL was so proactive. But I still agreed with them, Jeff, just because they don't have the luxury to just disappear. Because people aren't paying attention anyway. Right now, they have an opportunity to get all the eyeballs. Look at the NASCAR ratings. Look at the match ratings. Look at all of these numbers. People are clamoring for this content. If you bring them one of the four major sports and give them a tournament, right now you have a chance to captivate an audience. You have the ability, perhaps, to turn some people back in your favor, especially when you're in the NHL, just because, and the NBA qualifies as well, because the playoffs in the NHL are usually fantastic. The Stanley Cup playoffs are usually dramatic. They're fun. Ice is unpredictable. It can be very, it can be riveting stuff. It can be uber compelling. And the NBA, of course, with its long regular season, both of them with the 82-game regular season, if you just eliminate that and all of a sudden everything counts, plus we want sports, it seems like the perfect storm.
It does. You know, hockey coming back would be heavens. I like watching the Stanley Cup playoffs. I don't watch hockey at all during the regular season, but I watch it during the playoffs. One interesting thing to see hockey discussion on Twitter is about the heat during the summer and can the arenas keep the ice at the right temperature and how much would that cost to keep, you know, the T-Mobile Center in Vegas running in July for hockey games. It's kind of curious to see that discussion happen, but I think they should come back if possible. But a lot of discussion right now is on the NBA. And there's a lot of things I like about the 1-16 playoff seeding. And I know you mentioned you know, Zion wouldn't be there and John Morant wouldn't be there, but it does a couple things that people have been asking for a while now. One is that it reseeds the entire playoffs, right? So 1-16 would be no conferences, no divisions. It would just be 1-16. So you have Bucks versus Magic, Lakers versus Nets, Raptors versus Grizzlies, so you know, so John Morant is in there. You'd have Clippers, Mavericks, Celtics, Sixers, Nuggets, Pacers, Jazz, Rockets, and Heat and Thunder. So you could very realistically end up with, you know, Lakers, Clippers in the NBA Finals. You could have matchups, you know, you could have Raptors, Bucks in the NBA Finals. I find that hard to believe, but there's a possibility you can have that. And so I think it allows the NBA to do something that people have talked about for a while now, which is the reseeding, which is, you know, being able to seed either 1-16 based purely on record or 1-8 based off record in your conference. And it makes it to where you don't have kind of this uneven seeding at times because, you know, you're guaranteed, I believe, as a division winner, right, to have a better seed. I mean, same in the NFL, right? If you win your division at 9-7, you're going to have a better seed than you would if you finish 13-3 in the wild card and your division winner is 14-2, right? So there's always been talk about kind of this reseeding. This, Jason, gives an opportunity, in my opinion, to make it happen. I'm for leagues figuring out ways to make it more exciting for the fan. And this is a way, in my opinion, this year, it might not be something that the NBA always does, to make it more interesting for the fans to have a matchup, a Lakers-Clippers NBA Finals, which would be, I mean, in the best interest of the NBA. Now, you might not get many East Coast viewers, I don't know, but those are the two best teams with multiple Hall of Famers, multiple superstars, and it would be, I think, a fantastic match. I think it'd be better than Lakers Bucks or Clippers Bucks, wouldn't it?
I mean, it certainly would from a rating standpoint. I mean, the Bucks, the worst kept secret in the NBA in terms of what most people pay attention to is that the Bucks are 53-12. I mean, they're absurd when they stop playing. I mean, that's an insane record, but nobody cares. Like, yeah, they've got Giannis, but nobody cares because it's a Milwaukee Bucks. You reseed. I think you start to see. I feel like a lot of things exist now just because they always have, not necessarily because they always should. One of those would be divisions and things like East and West and all that. Like, I get it from a travel standpoint, but outside of that, it's arbitrary. It's just we're doing it because we've always done it. There's no reason to do it. there's usually somewhat of a lack of balance between the two conferences in the NBA in particular. There's many times where you feel like the de facto NBA championship is taking place in a round not named the NBA Finals. And I don't think that's what you want for your sport.
Yeah.
I would say if you reseed 1-16 this year, I think that's an experiment that sticks because it turns out to work better. And then you just kind of keep it going because nobody's going to – well – old fogies are going to probably come out of the woodwork to say whatever they're going to say, but the tradition can change in a flash, and I think 1-16 probably gives you a – it just gives you a better tournament. It gives you what you want.
Yeah, I think – you know, the traditional thought of conferences and divisions obviously is to spark interest in the regular season, right? Is to make sure that the regular season counts, where you have you know, teams fighting for that one seed, right? Fighting for the division win, fighting to, you know, to be the top of your conference. But that's not the way players play anymore. It's not what they care about anymore. They don't care if they're the one seed or two seed or three seed. They just need to get in the dance because the Warriors were good enough to not have the one seed and win. The Cavs are good enough to not have the one seed and win. Like home field advantage is a home court advantage, whatever you want to say, I think is less and less meaningful. We saw that in the NFL this year. It meant nothing. I mean, the Chiefs lost 3 home games. Of course, one without Mahomes. The Seahawks lost 3 home games, which is never, I think it happened since Wilson has been there, 3 in 1 year. You know, home field advantage feels less and less important now. It's more about just getting in the dance at a decent part of the dance. And make it a run. And that's what, I mean, your Titans did that, right? They got in the dance and made a run. And I feel like in the NBA, it's the same way. And so the traditional idea of divisions and conferences is not as important, especially when guys just aren't playing anymore. I mean, they're not playing as much as they used to. They're worried about the load management part of it. And I think it would make a more fascinating experiment. And I think this is going to be, this might, out of all the sports, the NBA in the long run might benefit from this time off to rethink their model, because if they go to the 16-team playoff, which it seems like it might happen, and they start in July, they're going to have to start again in December, like Christmas Day.
Yep.
Which we've always talked about as being the time it needs to start. I'm a sports fan. I watch all sports, all right? I watch even baseball. And I watch cornhole this weekend, okay? Like I watch all sports. And I don't care about the NBA until the Super Bowl's over, mostly because really nobody cares about the NBA, at least until Christmas and probably after the Super Bowl's done. Just the regular season seems irrelevant when it's played in the middle of football season. If you move it to December, you have a firm date on Christmas, which there's no college football anymore on Christmas, no bowl games, and the NFL plays, obviously, if it falls on a Sunday. I think this year it falls on a Sunday, they're playing. Otherwise, you get Christmas, you get that time period when the bowl games are won a day, and you get the NBA regular season, and then you get the summer months where there's not a lot of sports. I think this makes sense for them moving forward to have this new schedule, Jason.
Oh, I agree. I think that it's a winning formula. We've talked about it on this show when we've hosted. We've talked about it when we've been with Clay. It's an idea that it has pretty much it checks off every box for being just a better scenario for the NBA as a whole, and it pushes the All-Star break out of a spot where it's also sometimes competing against other content and things of that nature. I just think that because you have an 82-game regular season, and so many people think these guys don't care until they get to the postseason because good teams are going to find a way to do whatever they have to do, whether or not that's true or not. And I think at times it's been more true maybe than it is now. But if you give me basketball when there's not as much else, yeah, it's going to work out. I mean, college basketball, I think, is the most broken model of all right now, just in terms of, you talk about a regular season doesn't matter because the tournament includes too many teams. And you can argue that the NBA gets close with that because they have half their teams, you know, in the deal as well. But it could be a lot worse. So maybe I'm wrong to think that you should expand this thing out. But I do think you come back and you shake off the rust with some kind of very quick scrimmage thing. But you get to this. And if you want to do a play-in, then that's fine. But I could even see not really going that far with it, especially if you're really concerned about all the numbers and things like that. I'm really not. at this point in time. But if you are, then maybe you don't include everybody because that limits the number of people, which seems to be one of the big, one of these crucial factors that the association is looking at in terms of this comeback.
Well, I also think, look, eliminating half the teams obviously will allow you to possibly avoid, you know, players testing positive, right? If you bring back everyone, especially teams, Warriors, Knicks, I don't even know the back end of the NBA. I just know the Warriors aren't good this year because nobody's healthy. You know, if you bring them back to play five games, that does feel meaningless. Now, you probably have to pay them anyways, right? Like, you can't not pay the guys that are not playing. I mean, they have a contract. They've played their season. They're going to be owed whatever money they work out. But I wouldn't bring them back. I would go right to the playoffs. Now, how do you warm up for the playoffs is the question. Do you scrimmage each other? Do you just play randomly seeded games for a couple of days? But one thing you mentioned, Jason, that I think is interesting about the reseeding part of this, too, and we see this in really all sports kind of at the moment. But baseball, not as much. But, you know, the NBA, really only the top seeds are going to win. The NFL, this year was a little bit different. The Chiefs were a two seed. They weren't the one. But nonetheless, you know, the Niners were the one seed, right? Like, you get a lot of times the top seeds in all these sports making it to the big game. To the Super Bowl, to the NBA Finals, to the NHL. Like, NHL is different, obviously. But I feel like when you reseed this, Jason, you might get an opportunity to not get the 1 and 2 seed. You might have an opportunity to get someone else who, for whatever reason, is not seeded as high. You might get some upsets. I don't know. I'm trying to think of ways that the NBA can make this more exciting.
Yeah, well, see, here's the thing. I feel like that's why you shouldn't have too long of a period to shake off the rust, because you have a chance for unpredictability here, because we've never seen how these guys are going to react to being off for this long and then having to come back. Now, I don't want it to be a health concern, but I do think that you can start to have debates and discussions when you come back about, okay, well, this team, the Portland Trailblazers, you've had these guys together for an extended amount of time. You know, they've re-signed. They haven't been moving around. It's not like Westbrook's in his first season with the Rockets and all this kind of stuff. So they at least understand how to play together, even if they have to get back into game shape or there's fatigue or whatever like that. You can look at depth. You can look at age of the superstars in particular, like LeBron James. He's kind of an older guy, especially in this NBA. How is his body going to react? I mean, he's a well-oiled machine. We know that. He's been uncommonly healthy throughout the vast majority of his career, especially with the nature of physicality with which he approaches basketball.
Yeah.
But I think you can have different questions. Does the cream still rise to the top? It might. But I just don't think you come back and play a month and let everybody do it. And I don't think you can do that anyway. I think at best you get maybe 2 weeks and you try to play in a couple of teams, or you try to play in these last couple of seeds into the playoffs. But I don't think you go more than 2 weeks of basketball before you get to the playoffs.
No, I'm with you there. I don't think this is going to lead to more upsets, though, unless you have a one-game playoff, because the best teams and the best players are typically veterans, right? It's hard to win in the NBA. I mean, if you look at NBA history, without having like your superstar over about 27, 28 years old. I mean,
yeah, like, and usually they've had to go through some futility where they've been an 8 seed, then a 4 seed, then a 2 seed, then a 1 seed. NBA is usually a stair-step league. Yeah. You don't usually go from the bottom to the penthouse.
And we just watched, you know, the Last Dance, where that was obviously the case for Jordan, right? He worked his way up to winning a title.
Right.
The Warriors did the same thing. Like, it's how you get there. And so if you look at the top of the bracket, Bucks, Lakers, Raptors, Clippers, those teams and those players, now not with those teams, but those teams and players have been there before. They're going to have an advantage, in my opinion, over the young teams at the bottom that really haven't done it before, because they've been working out. We're like, LeBron knows how he needs to work out. Now, he might not know the end date of when he's supposed to be ready to play, but he knows how to prepare in the moment because he's done it for so long. Kawhi Leonard knows how to prepare in the moment because he's done it for so long. And that will help those guys play better themselves and as a team when they start this up than, in my opinion, the young teams who, you know, they know how to train, but do they really understand what it takes to get ready to kind of replay their season? You know, how quickly can they play with cohesion on the court? That type of stuff, I think, for younger players is really tough. And I think the older teams actually benefit from the rest and from the younger players not really knowing quite exactly how to be prepared in this moment. So I don't think it's going to actually help the young teams, Jason. I think the old teams in this situation who've had rest now for 4 months, I mean, that to me feels like a huge advantage for them.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for teams that haven't had nearly as much turnover, though, that know each other a little bit better. I think you can work out and still get there and still have to kind of rebuild chemistry because it's been 4 months and you haven't even been in facilities together and things like that. There have been some added challenges. So I think teams that have been together longer, and this is still an argument for veterans because you can't have been there longer if you're not a little bit older and have been in the league for a while and gone through all that. But I think if you have a team where you have 75% of that crew that's been there for 3 or 4 years, you're probably going to be a little bit better off just because you understand the tendencies and the instincts of the guys around you that you're going into battle with.
Right. And for them, these older teams, I mean, look, the Lakers have only been together in this iteration for, you know, for a year and less than a year, right? And so, but I just think their veteran presence of the players will help them ramp up, you know, quickly. Do you think, Tom Brady setting up workouts in the park, okay? That wasn't the first one that happened. It wasn't. They've been doing that for a couple of weeks now. Do you not think LeBron has had his boys over his house to play basketball? Like, I just think that these older guys figure out ways to get things. I mean, when we had the lockout in 2011, gyms were open, so it wasn't like we couldn't go work out. But, like, I was with a veteran offensive line group, and we went and worked out together all offseason. Like, we stayed in town, we hired a personal trainer, we got our work done. Like, older players figure out ways to get workouts in. My brother right now, he ordered himself just a home gym. He can afford to buy an entire home gym. You know, younger players don't really understand that process. So that's why I think just from personal experience and just my just kind of knowing how veteran players respond to situations, you know, they're a little bit, it's easier for them to deal with kind of unstable environment. They have their routines, they have everything down. I think young players right now won't prepare in the same manner. So I get what you're saying about it. I just think we come back and, like, the Lakers are just like boom, 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 boom. They're off and running. Clippers,
well, they might be, but
guys,
they have
boom,
a lot
boom,
of young
boom.
Guys too, though. I mean, they have
In the end, the playoffs will be won or lost for the Lakers.
True.
By how
about
LeBron
superstars.
And AD play.
But I mean, so, think about Giannis not having a basketball goal at his home, you know, and that story being out
that,
there.
That's the one kind of for this exact argument I was thinking about. Like, that's the one team where you're like, yeah, they're the one seed, but they're sort of young in the NBA still. I mean, I know they went through a little playoff run last year, but they're still young in the NBA. Giannis not having a court. And this is the thing. It's like a lot of these young players live in apartments, right? They live in condos. They're not living in apartments.
I don't think
condos,
Giannis
right?
is necessarily young, but
I mean, he's youngish for
he's
the
younger.
NBA, right? I mean,
what's
his year? 6'7" for him? And so, you know, he has in a condo, though. It's like some of these younger players who don't really have families quite yet don't have big houses with basketball courts in them. They live in condos, and they don't have places to play. So I'm really fascinated to see how this ramps up. And maybe this is why the NBA is like, look, we need 60 days to ramp back up. I know I'm in Charlotte. You know, we opened up our facility yesterday. I didn't open up anything. But Charlotte opened up. The Hornets opened up their facility yesterday for players. I know a bunch of players here live in apartments. They live in condos. They don't have access to court. So how fast can these guys get back up to speed and get ready to play?
All right, let's take our first break. We'll come back and we'll start to add football into this equation. We'll talk college, we'll talk NFL, and we'll talk about the timing of the NBA coming back, just as we expect to be starting to pay attention to guys wearing helmets that are about to knock each other around on Saturdays and Sundays, and how that might affect all of this. The business of sports, just unlike anything we've ever seen before, and the next couple of months are going to be instrumental, and you have to be ahead of the curve if you're one of these leagues that's not the NFL or not college football. Because you have a chance to either take some real positive steps forward or to go full Paula Abdul and take a few steps back. We'll be right back. This is Outkick the Coverage on Fox Sports Radio.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Finishing up second hour, Outkick the Coverage here on Fox Sports Radio. Along with Jeff Schwartz, I'm Jason Martin. Clay Travis back tomorrow. Crew in L.A. plus Dub Yarbrough here in Nashville with me. Jeff just kind of flippantly created content for us when he said, hey, take Tom and Peyton out of the match. Who else would you put in to make it interesting? And I think I actually have two answers I think are both pretty daggone good. But I asked and tasked the crew to try to come up with some answers, and we would go through all of them here in this final segment, this truncated segment. Dub, did you come up with one?
I have a couple as well. I'm going to just give you one, though, so I don't steal anybody else's answers. You mentioned Michael Jordan. I like that idea. The greatest basketball player of all time. Why not get another GOAT? Wayne Gretzky.
Hmm.
His daughter, Paulina, has a child and I believe is engaged to Dustin Johnson,
one
of the top golfers in the world. So I think, you know, basically four all-time greats on the course at one time. I think there could be some pretty good trash talking going on between MJ and Gretzky on the golf course. And I think a lot of people would tune into that as well.
I wonder if Gretzky is a trash talker.
Yeah, that's my question, too. I don't know.
I think we would find out, though. That could be a way to, go inside the ropes.
If he's not, though, like, the thing about doing it with Jordan is, like, you better have someone you know can talk trash. Because otherwise, they will get pummeled by Jordan the entire time.
Like, Reggie Miller would be a good one.
Yeah. He'd be good. In the NFL side, like, currently, Philip Rivers talks a lot of trash.
Yeah, it's like, all PG trash, too, so it's perfect for, like, TNT.
Like, I'm not sure that Jordan and Philip Rivers is a combo that anyone would watch, but if you're doing NFL players, like, Philip Rivers has to be up there. I mean, he's a legendary trash talker.
I'm telling you, Jordan and Isaiah it would be fantastic. Crew out in L.A., Roberto, did you come up with one? You got one during the break?
How about Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield?
Yeah, I was thinking about Tyson and somebody. Holyfield would probably be the top of that list. So that one's that's not bad.
Tyson's
if anybody else
jacked
out there
now.
Has one, let us know.
Tyson's yeah, jacked is. Now too, yeah.
So here are my – or Jeff, did you come up with any?
No, I feel like Conor McGregor would be an interesting one. I don't know if he golfs, just because the trash talk. Like, to me, this is more about the trash talk and the enjoyment and entertainment than it is just like being good at golf.
Charles and Shaq. There you go. It's Coop. I was trying to figure out who was actually out there. I didn't want to get that wrong. It's Coop that's out there. Charles and Shaq would definitely be entertaining, especially the TNT tie-in. You could have like Kenny on the course. And yeah, I think that's probably that would be a fun one. Here's a few. Charles Barkley versus Draymond Green.
Oh, yes. Oh.
That's one of the two that I wrote down. You want to talk about trash talk and bluster. And I think that one would be fun. And I feel like you have to propose this along with the idea that it's shot for shot. Like, after one person does, their teammate plays it from where their teammate just left the ball. And Nancy Kerrigan and Tonya Harding playing with Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson. So Kerrigan, yarfs one 700 yards left, and Phil has to go out there and knock it out of the, whatever, second county.
Why?
Is that – wow. Wow, I'd heard those names.
That was the one that I came up with where I was just like, okay, this is it. This is it right here. Just think about that. Tiger and Tanya versus Phil and Nancy.
Wow. There needs to be some good golf being played. I don't think you can just have people that don't play any golf whatsoever. Wow, that'd be incredible. Would people watch that, you think?
Are you kidding?
You draw in a different crowd, though, too. Wow. Old school golf guy would be pissed about that, though. He'd furrow his brow and be really angry.
Well, old school golf guy probably didn't care for Tom Brady and Peyton Manning getting involved either. Probably like, where's old Adam Scott and Zach Johnson? Where are these guys?
If you want some good golf, you could do Steph Curry and Tony Romo. That would be some great golf there.
Yeah.
That would. But they're both too nice.
They're too nice, yeah. The Draymond Green Barkley one would be fantastic because Draymond Green, man, like, dude.
Big tough guy, man. We could talk about it for an entire hour.
You're not even close to the player that Barkley was. Like, not remotely in the same planet as him.
Right.
And I can't believe Draymond thinks he is. It's wild to me.
It's because of where he's played and who he's played around. If that dude played in Orlando, we would never even know his name.
Nope.
He's been around such greatness that it has made him able to just cherry pick his way to probably close to a Hall of Fame career. Who knows if he actually gets there or not. When we come back, we'll talk more about, we'll actually talk college football. Also, NFL rule changes.
This is Outkick the Coverage with Clay Travis.
Final hour of the program. Hope you're well on this Tuesday. Hope Memorial Day treated you and your family well. Also, we are coming to you live from the Geico Outkick Studios. This is the Outkick the Coverage radio program. And although we're apart these days, hopefully that's beginning to decrease. We are sharing more, and hopefully that won't change. Geico sharing more, too, with the Geico Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for both current and new customers that last your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for info and eligibility. Jeff Schwartz, Jason Martin with you. Clay will be back tomorrow. We've had some fun today. We've talked about a wide variety of things. Yesterday, we talked about just the dearth of knowledge of movies emanating from Charlotte, North Carolina. I'm glad I don't live in that state anymore. I would have to, like, you know, Jeff, there are people that would tell you, if they know me, that when you tell me you haven't seen things, all of a sudden they start showing up in your mailbox. Luckily for me, streaming services now exist, so I can just point you in the direction of things instead of having to, like, go broke sending you DVDs of things that you need to see.
Yes. I mean, there's now the list has continued to multiply for what I need to culture myself with. And I'll work my way through it as best I can. But there's no guarantee I'm going to get to all of it.
Reading an article in the Wall Street Journal and kind of parsing it through the break a little bit, I'm walking away from this Daily Beast article, which is a beast. Good Lord, this thing is long.
It's a long piece of work.
Yeah, there's a lot of research, and there's a lot of history there, and it ain't good history if you're a fan of that guy. But anyway, this from the Wall Street Journal. The story of how the leagues got to thinking of playing sports again in restricted environments is also the story of how leagues move the goalposts on safety and how much has changed psychologically and economically since one positive test was enough to wipe out billions of dollars. In the brave new world of sports, a single positive test might not even stop a game. The leagues are proceeding under the assumption that players and coaches testing positive is inevitable. The future of sports is contingent on baking that risk into your plans. There's a medical expert at Cal Berkeley that says, I think it may be too stringent to say that one player testing positive means everything has to shut down. But then it goes on to say, no guarantee these seasons will finish even if they restart. Still months of hurdles to clear and hard questions to answer. Also, the distinct possibility of disaster if players or coaches get seriously ill. And then a great sentence, Jeff. But the best case scenario is the sports famine ending with a feast. A summer with NBA and NHL playoff games and MLB action, followed by a bounty of NFL, college football, tennis, and golf majors in the fall. Yes, please, bring on more of that.
well, there's definitely, it feels like a light at the end of the tunnel, right? I mean, I say this on my Pac-12 show every day. I'm like, look, we're one day closer to football being here. And whether that's football in the fall or football later, which I think is unlikely, we're getting closer to sports. And look, there has to be an acceptance that going back to sports will include players testing positive for a coronavirus. It does not mean the players are symptomatic, but that players are going to test positive. We already saw it in the UFC, it happened. And life continued on. So can the NBA, college football, NHL, MLB, and NFL withstand is the wrong word, but can they be okay with the scrutiny of coming back and players testing positive? It might be multiple players on a team. It might be a coach. We discussed this, Jason, on our show. Like, what happens if an elder coach, let's just use Belichick, for example. Mm-hmm. Let's say that he gets sick and he has to go to the hospital because he is of age where it's, you know, the coronavirus is the symptoms are way worse.
He's in the risk.
What happens if he gets sick and he goes to the hospital? He has to spend time in an ICU. Let's just use him for example. Does football continue? I would say yes, because that's just one person. Unfortunately, that's kind of the way the machine is. Like, Can the NFL withstand the media backlash? Sure they can. They withstand it all the time. But at what point, Jason, would it be too much for the NFL to deal with? Is it multiple coaches getting sick? Is it is it, you know, what would it, to me, it has to be like an entire room, like an entire quarterback room is out in quarantine. And in that situation, the NFL, in my opinion, would just forfeit the game and that team would just lose. I just think once the ship gets going, especially in the NFL, and I can't say the same for the NBA and for Major League Baseball. I don't know if they feel the same way, but when the NFL starts going in August, they've had months now to ramp up and figure out how they're going to do this. And there's still a lot of time left, guys, between now and the start of training camp. It's dwindling, but there's still June. There's still most of July. Like, there's still many weeks to figure out how they're gonna do this. But once you set sail, man, I can't see it turning around unless in December, you know, states just say we're out, we're closed. But once the ship gets rolling in football, I don't see it stopping at all.
No, I don't either. I think once you let people back out of their homes, it's going to be a lot harder to get them back inside as well.
And this has been I've made this argument for a while with a lot of people that I talk to about this. I say, look, you know, we did the lockdown, okay? We've done it already. And I'm someone that agreed with it. You know, my wife is in healthcare. We talked about, I've known about this and what's happening in our state, especially, far longer than people.
Now, you and I have had a lot of discussions just behind the scenes. I mean, my wife's a pediatrician. Your wife's in the medical field as well. So they get a lot of updates that a whole lot of people don't see.
They get a lot of stuff. And so look, I was for them. And as the data has shown now, it appears we need to get back to life. And I'm for that as well.
I think you were more for them than me. I understood doing it for a couple of weeks, but I feel like Trump made a major mistake not sticking to that Easter timetable. I think we harmed the country to a great degree for bad evidence for much longer than we needed to.
You know, the thing about the modeling, we've come to find out it's been wrong in both directions, right? It's been wrong in the adjusted modeling. I asked a buddy about this because a buddy of mine did a whole extensive study on the modeling, and he's like, it was wrong. I'm like, well, yeah, no wonder.
Most models are, because they're based on incomplete information, correct. Which is why taking them as gospel makes no sense.
And that's why I've kind of been on the thing of, like, we just kind of don't know, so let's be, I guess, more cautious than needed. But now it's obviously time to get back to life. So I was more on, like, the cautious side than you were, but nonetheless, like, you know, that it's time to kind of get back and get sports going. Like, it's time for that to happen, and you have to be able to withstand, you know, some sort of scrutiny that happens when you get back to work before people think you should get back to work. And again, you know, you can't just live on what social media wants you to do. And so when these businesses, these sports leagues, get back to business, you just have to be able to withstand the negative comments that are going to come because you're doing this.
So let's kind of bridge that and talk about Michigan President Mark Schlissel and what he has said to the Wall Street Journal. I have the article in front of me here. He says, any decision we make for this coming fall is likely going to be the case for the whole academic year. What's going to be different in January? And basically he said, Michigan's not going to have a football season unless kids are in classes on campus, and he doesn't know if that's going to be a sure thing. At the same time, you've got Iowa tweeting out yesterday from the university, looking forward to welcoming back our football players, our student athletes on campus here in just like a week or so. So it's amazing how different it is from one state to the next. But I think between Iowa and Michigan, it has something to do with the fact that Kim Reynolds is the governor in Iowa, and Mrs. Whitmer, Gretchen Whitmer, being the one of the more, like, just overbearing in terms of the way she's kind of tried to manage this crisis for her state. It's like Michigan is acting based more Whitmer-like than Reynolds-like, and this may be a really bad reaction, Jeff, and you can take me to task for this. But when I first saw this, when I first saw what Schlissel was saying and just the way Michigan is going on, I was just like, if kids aren't back on campus for classes in Michigan in the fall, I'm taking my kid away from Michigan. And that's one of the great universities in this country, but I'm going somewhere else because I don't buy into this anymore.
Yeah, that's part of this. Again, we get back to the finances of this, right? Like, part of it is that a lot of these schools saying, look, we're going to be open this fall because they need people to, like, come to their school, right? They need people to, like, to come, you know, and pay for, you know, pay and
tuition
everything.
And things of that nature.
Pay tuition. You know, the one thing about the president in Michigan is he's one of the only presidents that has a kind of a studied in in like viruses, right? Like he's like, this is what
virology.
Virology. Yes. Virology in immunology. So I think he's making this decision or these comments separate of the governor's stance in Michigan. I think that's my read on that is that it's separate, but again, it's so different. And you know, you mentioned Iowa. Iowa, I believe I'm right, is starting up even high school athletics.
Yes, 1st. Kim Reynolds has done a really nice job, I think, at not overreacting here. I think your point, though, before we leave, what you just said about him being in immunology is. And Fauci's taken a lot of criticism for this, and I am not a Anthony Fauci fan at all, but the one argument in favor of Fauci that I've heard that did make me pause and think is Anthony Fauci is always going to err on the side of caution.
Correct.
Because health is the only concern that he has. It's what he is an expert in. It's the same thing we're talking about. We're not going to Tom Brady for golf advice, but we will for, you know, success or leadership or things of that nature, certainly football and all that kind of stuff.
Avocado ice cream recipes.
Yeah, all of those almonds, all of that kind of stuff can be out there. But when you think about immunologists, the only time that they're going to get dinged for anything, the only time they're going to be held responsible is if they underreact. So they're right. Almost always going to first overreact, which is what I think we've seen. The problem was just we're basing all this on really, really bad models that seem to have been flawed from the start. And that's just giving them the best intentions. If you're going to go further, you can go down the other side. But Iowa is a state that was, you know, the IMHE model out of the University of Washington said they were going to have a ton of deaths and all this kind of stuff. And it never happened.
Yeah.
I do think Schlissel, that model's been wrong all over the place.
It was wrong originally. It was wrong when they revised the model, and it's still wrong now. So I have a question, Jason. This is along this topic, but like,
sure.
So I keep seeing people say, you know, of course, and I agree with you, the models were wrong, but like, what should we have done? Like, and that's the thing is like, I feel like it's easy to criticize, decisions that were made, but. I don't know enough to say what we should have done. I mean, I have an idea, but I think in our country, it doesn't really work. Our country's too big to do what other countries have done as far as like a shutdown, you know, for multiple weeks to make it kind of go away. But again, it hasn't really gone away. But like, I'm realistic in that. That was never going to happen in America. But like, what would have been the better option or options than what we tried to do? Like, I just wish people would also present like that side of it when they say, hey, this didn't work and we didn't do this right. Like, what was your idea? Because I don't have a great idea. I mean, I listen to the experts. I'm not an expert.
Well, you and I are similar. When this thing first happened, I was really in the middle on it because I was hearing things from the medical community and I was hearing things from other sides and at that point in time. But I think that one of the big things we did is we went to models without questioning what reason they had for existing. I mean, you look at that Imperial College model now, that is the poster child for why you better do your own research and why you better challenge assumptions. I mean, I saw a lot of people just posting that information when it first dropped as if there was no possible way to question it, and it comes out that it was based on flawed science, that Neil Ferguson is not somebody that you can look up to in that way in any way, breaking his own quarantine to see his mistress and things like that.
But like for me and you, like we see that model, right?
Yeah.
And our wives see that model. And like we don't know any better, so we're like, all right, well, that looks pretty bad.
First couple of weeks, I get it. Okay, we need to find out what it is we're dealing with. I think what we did is we looked at models and not history. We didn't look at the history of viruses. We didn't look at all of these numbers. We looked at these curves, and then we said, let's flatten the curve, but we had no idea when it started. Everybody, that number keeps getting backdated. Yeah, like you start saying, well, December, maybe it was December, maybe it was November, all these kinds of things. We did not, and I think that you get to a point where I just stopped feeling like most of this country believed that what they were doing was necessary, but there were others that were trying to push through a bunch of other stuff that needed this to continue in order to go down that pathway. Like even right now, just as one example, I subscribe to The Economist. It's the one magazine that I subscribe to, and I've I've had it for years. But The Economist put the cover of their magazine this week was where I just kind of rolled my eyes and I was just like, I pray we have not gone down the dark side here with The Economist, because they've, I mean, I know that they've gone a little bit in certain directions, and I think Trump has pushed them a lot further down that pathway. But basically what they asserted on the front of their magazine this coming week that arrived in my, you know, arrived in my mailbox was, you must seize the moment. That's what it said. It said, seize the moment, the chance to flatten the climate curve. And right there, I think it's just an example. It's just like, we must use this to stop climate change. If we can just stop this for 30 years, maybe we can stop all of this. So I think that there was, I think there are people now that are in this to keep the lockdowns alive for reasons that have nothing to do with being afraid of a virus. But what should we have done? We should have been cautious. But we also should have looked at the high-risk tranches of the population and actually done something for them, because that's not what we did. I mean, without going into the specifics of it, people were told not to go outside. They were told to stay in climate-controlled environments where the virus can live for 4 or 5 days on surfaces, or it can just it's more potent there. And you look at climate-controlled environments, that's where a lot of this has happened. So I don't think anybody had a perfect answer here.
Yeah.
And that's why I thought, if you were an atheist at the beginning, or you were a true believer at the beginning in terms of this is the Imperial College model or this is absolutely nothing, you were wrong, and you were going to be proven wrong. We had to sit there. We did need to err on the side of caution, but there needed to be a timetable for it. And the problem was, it became indefinite, and then it became not until there's a vaccine.
Well, that's been silly the entire time. That to me has been the silliest thing ever, because, you know, that might take years. Like, and even with a vaccine, it doesn't mean it's eradicated, right? I mean, we have a flu vaccine, doesn't mean the flu has gone away. So that discussion point, and that, like, that type of discussion, I think, doesn't help anyone's argument. That doesn't make your argument any better. So saying something like that, that's the silliest one of all. Like, you can't wait to play sports. Let's bring it back to sports for a second. Like, you can't wait to play. And that's impossible. Like, it's not going to happen. So stop saying that.
No.
I can't listen to your argument if that's part of what you're saying.
So, you know, you saw the governor of Ohio, I believe it was, who, you know, Ohio was the one that shut down the Dayton NCAA deal and that one of the earliest deals. He bought, at least the report I saw said that he bought his season tickets for Ohio State football in the fall just a couple of weeks ago. I don't know when fans are going to be there, and I don't know if it's going to be like a checkerboard effect where there's social distancing being taken into effect here, but I find it hard to believe we're going through an entire football season without people in the seats. Maybe in some places.
I've said this. Well, there's a couple of things to discuss here. One is competitive balance, right? Which is, you know, it's not going to happen. There's not going to be uniform. I mean, the NCAA has already said, like, we're not deciding these things, right? Like, we're leaving up to the states, or individual schools or universities. You know, but we talked about this thing about, like, not caring so much. And I've said this for a couple of weeks now, is, you know, if we go through June and July and August, and things kind of get back to as normal as they can. I mean, I think like my state, North Carolina, for example, phase three is July 1st, I think the latest, the way things are going right now, which means, you know, like, phase three is like everything's open, right? Maybe there's a capacity limit, maybe there's not. And of course, like, some places aren't even listening, right? And like, once we get back to like normal life per se, I just don't think you can go back into restrictive measures.
No, I don't either. I don't think people are going to do this again.
I don't think they are either. And then, you know, so how does that matter for sports? Well, I think it ends up to where it's like, look, I'm in Charlotte. The Panthers have a game. All right. You can go or you can't go. Like, it's not going to be this thing where we do social distancing at the games. If you want to go, sure. If you don't, you don't have to go. Now, would I go? I don't know. Other people would definitely go. And that's just it's their choice. It's their freedom to. Now, the question obviously becomes, Jason, the litigation part of this, right? Is that sports leagues,
if there's liability, if there's liability here, that's going to be the problem. Like, there needs to be.
That's the number one problem.
And you have to be able to. There must be freedom for these places. And look, that was supposed to be included in the last gigantic bill that was supposed to save the world coming out of Congress, was that companies like Walmart or whatever could open their doors to full capacity, or businesses could, without fear of litigation if somebody came in there and contracted the virus or claimed such, because we do unfortunately live in a very litigious society.
I know. And that's because I also it's unless you're staying at home all day and then just go to the Panthers game, it's hard to prove that the Panthers got you sick. But nonetheless, that's what people are worried about. And so I think we're the thing about it is we're seeing almost every day, and we could probably parse that into weeks. Every week we're getting more positive news about the idea of fans being back in the stands. And on the football side, right? The Ohio State athletic director Gene Smith is like, yeah, we're gonna see 20,000 to 30,000, maybe 50,000.
Maybe 40,000 to 50,000, yeah.
And we're seeing like slowly the breaking. I mean, even Oregon, I'm obviously an Oregon grad, you know, the governor there has been very forward in saying like, hey, look, we're not having fans in sporting events till the end of September. And, you know, they have a very restrictive kind of lockdown. And even she is like, I think the other day announced like, all right, well, Oregon State, you can go start practicing again. Like you can bring players back if you want, or fairly soon you can. Like, we're seeing the money part of this, I think, start playing a big part of it, and the pressure to kind of get back to normal life. And I think these governors, especially when it comes to sports, we saw in California as well, are starting to sort of break down and allow these things to happen at a pace far quicker than I think a lot of us expected it to be.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree 1,000,000%. I know we need to get to break, so we'll go ahead and do that. And we'll come back on the other side. We'll continue to talk about this and what the Michigan thing means and what might happen on the West Coast. There's a myriad of stuff to get into. If you want to tweet us, and a lot of you are doing that this morning, we appreciate it. Jeff's at Jeff Schwartz. I'm at JMart Radio. You can call us as well. We will take your calls at 877-99 on Fox. That's 996-6369. Back in a moment here on Fox Sports Radio.